Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 25th of February, recording at 9:34 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various different asset classes, but I will also deal with the short-term timing because it's really quite important here, particularly for stock markets. Now, in terms of my overall view on stock markets, very briefly, the U.S. stock market, I maintain, is in a secular bear market, long defined here as a generational long process of P/E ratio contraction and rising yields. That occurs following burst bubbles, such as we saw with the technology sector in 2000. And it occurs because over time, investors realize, well, in this instance, current instance, that they're not back in the 1990s, and that markets are not quite the buy and hold that they were previously, and therefore they gradually become more cautious, meaning that they demand better value in terms of lower P/E ratios and also higher yields. Now, in a secular bear market, I've said before that monetary policy will make a huge difference as to whether we just get a flat sideways trading range or whether we get a more severe overall bear market such as Japan saw following its bubble peak in the end of 1989. Now, the example of the flat trading range, which if you're anywhere near my generation, you'll know or you'll recall from the 1967 through the very early 1980s, when there was sort of a glass ceiling on the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 1,025 and a series of bungee jumps on the downside, of which the 1974 sell-off was by far the most severe. But at the end of that long secular bear market, you had, and I'm talking about now, say in the second quarter of 1982, when really the secular bull market got underway, but the S&P dividend got up to 6.21. Yes, that was, you actually heard what you thought you heard, but I'll repeat it. The S&P dividend in the second quarter of 1982, and this is the S&P 500 dividend, was 6.21%. What is it today? Well, I haven't looked in a while, but I think it's around 1.7, 1.8. And back at that same period, second quarter 1982, there were a lot of very major U.S. companies that were selling at price-earnings ratios of around 10. And we're talking about real earnings, not some of the cleverly contrived accounting stuff that we see all too often here today. So that's where I feel that we're heading over time, not in any sort of linear fashion, but in a series of rolling waves. And then these rolling waves will be punctuated by, or characterized by, technical bull phases, which can last for quite some time, as we've seen. For instance, we are nearing the 2-year anniversary for this technical bull phase on Wall Street, and most other stock markets, or many other stock markets around the world, have conformed to that same old pattern, such as the influence of Wall Street. Now, I maintain that this bull run is very long in the tooth, and I don't like a lot of the signs that I see. For one thing, interest rates are going to go higher, that's short-term interest rates. On the other hand, until long-term interest rates move sharply higher, I don't think we will see a serious sell-off in the U.S. stock market. But you know my view that the bond market is an accident waiting to happen. And I expect that accident, or the next stage or step in that accident, to occur certainly over the next 2 years. And it wouldn't surprise me if it was sooner rather than later. Now, Within, and just mention a few other factors here that that do concern me. In addition to the interest rate outlook, first we've got the oil price back up above $51 and holding. That's certainly a concern, although I know that we're not no economy or no developed economies is dependent on oil, or as I'll put it this way, is affected as adversely by the hike in the oil price as would have been the case or was the case 20 or 30 years or so ago. But this is still an important factor. And more significant, probably, and lesser until the oil price spikes above $60, and it will. I just won't put a time frame on it, but I think it'll be this year. More serious at the moment is this M&A activity. Now, that's not serious in itself, but it is a signal of a very, very mature bull run. You don't get this type of M&A activity, as I've said before, at the beginning of a major stock market rally. You get it towards the end of the major rally. And there are other factors that I have cited, including the booming period for these various natural resource shares. Now, that's a sector that I do like. It's a sector that I maintain is in a secular bull market. But that was the case a year or two ago, and these shares were wallflowers for an awfully long time compared to some of the other things that were performing, and they are booming now. Well, that's what we expect at the, or it's what I expect at a very late stage in a stock market cycle. And secular bull market or not, that sector will get its shakeouts periodically, but not yet. It'll probably be the last one to turn down. Another concern, the some weakening in bank shares, financial shares, is not chronic yet, but I had a look at I've been looking at these Australian banks over the last few days because there's a little bit concerned. And Australia was better today, and that's good. I said yesterday in my audio that it needed to bounce, and it did, up 33 points or 0.82%. But the shares of ANZ, CBA, NAB, WBC, they're not performing all that well, and for Australia to hold its ground here, let alone go higher, we really do need to see those bank shares pick up. But generally, I'd say keep a close eye on the performance of bank shares. They usually lead on the downside. I'm going to take a little sip of water here. Now, what I should also add in the context of the overall secular bull market, well, I have a bigger part in the context of the overall secular bear market. I do, however, have two very bullish long-term themes. My two big themes, you're probably familiar with them, but they're new subscribers coming in all the time, and so I will repeat and emphasize these. One theme is supply inelasticity. That applies mainly to the industrial commodities and precious metals. And gold had a 21-year bear market. It's going to have a very long bull market, in my view. And the best part of that bull market will be near the end, the last 4 or 5 years, when people are very concerned about inflation, which is building up very, very slowly within the system, despite what despite the denials that one so often reads. Central banks sowed the seeds of a major inflationary cycle over the last few years, but it takes time for all this to percolate through. We will see the least inflation probably in manufactured goods because of globalization and all of the competition. But as I've said before, if you pay the household bills, you know that there are definitely rising inflationary pressures out there, and these resource costs are starting to kick back in through the system. And if you look at the charts of those agricultural commodities, we may have a hot summer in terms of price action there. Okay, so this supply inelasticity theme, that means that when it's right to be in stock markets, and I think it is still right to be in stock markets, I want to be very overweight in the natural resource sectors. And that's energy, it's major metal stocks and funds, and it's also precious metals, precious metal equities. Now, the other big theme that I have, and I'm certainly not alone in this, so I'm not alone in either of the categories, but fewer people are talking about the supply and elasticity than are talking about what I'm about to mention, and that's emerging markets. And the emerging markets, I think, are even more interesting in this particular long-term cycle than before. And a lot of the reason for that is the march of technology. Now, there's always been technology, but we've never seen such an accelerated rate of development of technology. And we all know how much that technology has contributed to our own efficiency. Well, anyone who has a computer will know that. And my business, for example, has been transformed by technology, and I'm hardly unique in that sense. However, I could still produce my investment letter after a fashion. Well, it was an investment letter after a fashion without the technology. I did it for decades. The huge transformation in terms of technology is within the developing economies. So you take a country like China, which the last generation have seen go from the appalling conditions of the Mao era to this very rapidly developing economic and unfortunately military superpower. Not unfortunate in the economic sense, I think that's all to the good. But I don't want to digress. This mushrooming growth, well, it's technology that has facilitated that. I mean, China wasn't going to invent all these things, but China had the cheap labor, and then they decided that the government decided that it was going to pursue a period of rapid growth. Well, how do you actually do that? You create the conditions where you make China a very competitive and attractive market in terms of global manufacturing. And that's exactly, of course, what's happened. And the same story was repeated earlier on in, or occurred earlier on in other developing countries, which are now developed countries. Singapore is a classic example of that. And also Hong Kong is a not a separate country, but separate region. And we are seeing this happen now in India as well. So we're getting this huge growth taking place. And it's not just Asia, of course. We've got Eastern Europe, which really is Western and Southern Europe's China in some respects. It's on a smaller scale. But my point is that it's hardly surprising that loads of German companies and other major companies within the developed country part of the EU will find that it makes a lot more sense for them to relocate production facilities in Eastern Europe, and that's going to continue, and other countries may do that as well. So their growth rates are just going to be much higher. It can only be that way. Now, I very much favor emerging markets where democracy receives more than lip service. But all of these emerging markets have done exceptionally well. And then there's also the perception that not all is well with the United States economy. I don't need to go into all that. You read about that all the time. So lots of American investors and other people who would traditionally have invested more heavily in the United States are looking around at the various different emerging markets. And then, of course, there are the emerging markets which benefit from the supply inelasticity activity. So this is a hugely important area, but timing is extremely important in this, because when Wall Street takes its next bungee jump on the downside, and believe you me, it will, I mean, it always has happened, and in a secular bear trend, it happens more frequently than certainly that long period that you saw during the 1990s. So when that next occurs, that will certainly pull down a number of these high beta emerging markets, and the higher they've gone between now and that time, the more vulnerable they will be to extremely sharp corrections. So that is what I expect to see. Next major downturn on Wall Street, and you will see a number of these emerging markets tumble, and those that have rallied the most are very likely to score some of the very biggest declines overall. Now, that doesn't mean we need to pile out of stock markets right now. And having been a bit concerned about some of the downward dynamics that we'd seen in Europe and Wall Street coming off its December highs and a week or two ago, markets have firmed again, and we've seen a good bounce in here. You really could say you got a minor support level that's worth noting on most indices, which are this month's lows to date. You have a much more important support level, or I should say support levels for many other indices, which are the January reaction lows. Now, if you don't want to hover over every little fluctuation for all the different markets that Owen and I monitor, for instance, and I wouldn't blame you for not wanting to do that, then really just say as long as the January lows hold for the stock market indices that you're involved in, or for the stock market indices that represent the countries that you've invested in, or the asset classes that you've invested in, you don't need to worry a great deal. Okay, as long as those January lows hold, you don't need to worry a great deal. And the latter stages of a bull run are very often among the best. Now, watch that NASDAQ index, because that is pretty much a risk index, and that's underperformed here recently. And if the NASDAQ index, which is not all that far off its January low, if that were to go back down through that would, to me, again, that's not going to represent any kind of global sell signal, but it would be providing more evidence that we are very much in the end game of this very good medium term, nearly 2 years old, global stock market rally. Okay, moving on to the government bonds. I maintain that the bubble burst back in June of 2003, and that we're in a very extended phase of top formation development. It will remain a very extended top formation because people are still concerned about deflation and disinflationary pressures. Now, that's going to go on for quite some time. And if you fear something, you can always see pockets of evidence to support the case. All I would ask you to do, those who are skeptical about this, my hypothesis for the end of the bull market in government bonds, just think back to what was happening when Paul Volcker, shortly after Paul Volcker was appointed to the role of chairman of the U.S. Federal Reserve back in the, oof, gosh, it's late, so don't hold me down to the date. Was it in the early 1980s, but brought in with the task of controlling inflation, wringing inflation out of the system, which he did with a vengeance. And long after inflation was on the wane, people were still worrying and fretting about the next revival of inflation. So long after deflation and disinflationary pressures are receding, people are going to go on worrying about their return. That's just human nature. That's the way it always works. So my hunch is that bond markets will range sideways, get a number of shakeouts. I do think we're in the early stages of one of those shakeouts, and that we'll see a weaker government bond market. And to whatever extent long-dated government bond yields rise, that will pose an increasing threat to global stock markets, even though you may get some shifting, particularly of speculative money from bonds into equities in the short term. Now, on currencies, as far as I'm concerned, well, it's not as far as I'm concerned. Historic evidence, we don't get generational long bull markets and bear markets in currencies the way you do with stock markets and commodity markets and government bond markets. The main reason for that is because no country could withstand a generation-long appreciation in its currency vis-à-vis other currencies, its main competitors, in other words. It would be ruinous economically, so they just print more of the stuff or lower interest rates, do whatever it takes to get the currency down. However, we do get runs in currencies which can last anything from major runs which can last for a year or two up to, say, 6 or 7 years. Now, the focus on the US dollar is interesting, and it's certainly an important issue here, not only in terms of its influence on a good many other markets that I'm interested in, that I know many of you are interested in, but and other factors. But my feeling, not to go on too long in this audio, is that the US dollar, first, it's not going to collapse. That I think those forecasts are wide of the mark. Not going to collapse because, first, I don't think there's a serious reason for it to collapse. Yeah, I know all about the deficit situation. As long as the U.S. remains a creative, strong, reasonably strong, viable economy, a good place to do business, in other words, as Bush keeps saying, then I don't think we're going to see any collapse of the currency. And a collapse of the dollar would be far worse for most other countries' economies than it would be for the United States, as you will appreciate, I'm sure. Now, my feeling overall is that we've seen most of the dollar's bear market in terms of actual price move. I don't think we've seen the lows, but we've seen most of the decline in terms of price. In terms of time, the dollar could meander around for a very long time, retesting its lows, going historic lows. I'm talking about down to, I think, just below 78 on the US dollar index. And I think that will be retested and probably exceeded by a bit. And the bottoming out process, I don't think, has begun. And when it does begin, I think it's likely to be lengthy. Here in the meantime, the currencies I like are the ones that have an interesting fundamental story. And right now, that interesting fundamental story is natural resources. And the other factor that makes them attractive is yield. So I like the Antipodean currencies, and that's where I have my long positions against the US dollar. At the moment, I'm long the Australian and New Zealand dollars against the US currency. Now, commodities. I've already talked somewhat about this booming environment that we're seeing in natural resources. These are secular bull markets. They followed very long, certainly a generation or a bit more of a generally bearish phase during which production facilities are scaled down, mothballed, or even just taken completely out of commission. And it takes a long time to revive those facilities, production facilities. I'm talking about for metals in particular. But see, it takes a long time to revise those mining facilities under the best of conditions in terms of catching up to the demand for the metals. But when you have this voracious appetite for these raw materials coming from China and other emerging economies, it's a very, very difficult challenge indeed. So you could say the same thing really about oil, particularly in terms of oil refining. So we are going to see further moves in not only in the short term, but I think over the very long term on the upside for most of these natural resources. Now, they will see periodic setbacks. It tends to be a volatile sector. A dollar rally will contribute to those setbacks, or just normal conditions such as getting overextended in the short term. But as long as there's no global recession, or I'll put it this way, until the next global recession, and I don't think that's right around the corner, we will not see, well, we'll see plenty of volatility in these natural resources, these industrial commodities, but they won't move down and stay down. They'll bounce back, and for the most part, they'll bounce back pretty rapidly, as we've seen. So this is an immensely attractive area, and one that I do like to play. I like to play it in terms of the actual resources on a trading basis, and also in the shares that are involved in terms of producing these resources. And my hunch is that the next dot-com bubble, if you will, is really going to be in resource stocks. And we'll get all the hyping of little oil exploration companies and mining stories that we saw with the dot-com boom. But we're nowhere near the equivalent phase of the year 2000 in the tech and telecom boom. We've got a long way to go for that yet. So this, as I say, is an immensely attractive area. And have a look at that Reuters CRB index. I put up monthly and weekly charts of that on the website here today. Now, precious metals, I do feel that, well, people are sort of dismissing this as largely a US dollar story. So far, that's been the case. But if I were a betting man, I'd bet heavily that over the next 10 to 15 years, that gold will appreciate and appreciate significantly against every single one of the fiat currencies. And silver will probably do even better. And I have a fondness for silver as a trading vehicle. One shouldn't have a fondness for any market I appreciate, but I think I can maintain my objectivity for the most part, and still say that because the fondness is based solely on the fact that it's a highly volatile, which means you get to play the same upside several times, provided one has the wit to get out before the gains are retraced. Well, that's what trading's all about, isn't it? So that's pretty much my big picture long-term outlook plus some short-term timing. Bottom line, in terms of stock markets, which I know the majority of you are interested in, we don't need to worry as long as those January lows hold. Have an absolutely fantastic weekend.